Well, listen to your mother. We all know that in a lot of cases that can make a whole lot of sense. Well, this weekend you've got a chance to listen to a lot of moms presenting a series of life readings in celebration of Mother's Day. Listen to Your Mom events will be taking place across the nation, and we're going to get a sneak peek at the Kansas City show that's coming up this Saturday night right now. With us are two cast members from the production. Rita Ahrens is a cast member. She blogs at surrenderdorothy.typepad.com. Rita, nice to have you.
Thanks.
Welcome up to date. Lisa Allen is also a cast member. Her blog is backtoallen.com. And Lisa, nice to have you too.
Thank you.
Welcome, yeah. Well, do each of you have a sense that we don't celebrate mothers maybe as much as we should be, Rita? Or what do you think?
I don't know that it's that. I think there's an experience of motherhood and daughterhood. And Listen to Your Mother show is kind of all about all of that experience. Men actually could have been part of the show. We didn't have any tryout that I'm aware of. But our cast will be reading a series of pieces that some of them focus more on the motherhood side of things and some of them focus more on the daughterhood side.
And Lisa, does yours focus on which one?
Mine is more on the daughterhood side.
Yeah. Why is that?
I think that in my case, the experience that I had with my own mother shaped me as a mom. So in order to talk about motherhood, I had to talk about what I experienced as a daughter first.
And here's the big question. Did it shape you in positive ways or negative ways?
I hope positive, but I guess you'd have to talk to my kids instead of me.
Yeah. Find out from them.
Exactly.
We'll get them on the line here in just a minute and get their stories here. Rita, how about you? What's the focus of your presentation?
I think my presentation is more hopeful and sentimental with regard to my experience as a mother because my mother had cancer when I was about my daughter's age. And so I'm always kind of living with the awareness that I'm not sick and what a gift that is to be at this age and have her be at that age and not have the same problems that we had when I was around that age. And so my
And what age was that exactly?
I was 11 and, well, 10 and 12-ish. It happened twice. And my daughter's 9, so she's approaching that age, and I'm the same amount older than my daughter that as my mother was from me. Yeah. So it lines up really closely, and it's kind of an emotional period of time.
And those are tough years when you were a kid to be dealing with that and watching your mother go through that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah, they were. And but, you know, she's been in remission for more than 20 years, and she's alive, and she made it, and that's an amazing thing. So I try and focus on that. But I do think the experience colors my vision of motherhood.
I was going to say, how did you deal with that as a 10-year-old, as a 12-year-old? What was that like for you?
You know, I didn't deal with it very well. It was the 80s, and there was a big stigma. A lot of people died. You know, cancer could be more of a death sentence back in the 80s than it is now, and I think fewer people had awareness of it and support systems for it. I ended up actually developing an eating disorder in high school that I kind of traced back to that, and I ended up working my experiences through into a young adult novel that just came out in February called The Obvious Game.
Yeah.
So that's how I dealt with that, is to try to kind of I write my experiences and I try and reveal some of those emotions in a way that I hope gives voice to people that are feeling them but can't quite say you know, what they're going through.
And is that what your presentation is going to be about? Is that
it is kind of in along that line. I mean, I am in a really good place in my life now, so the pain is gone for me. And so I just try to access it at times to write something that I hope will help somebody else.
Do you want to give us a sense of what you're going to say on Saturday night? Can you give us a little taste of that?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's called The Halfway Point.
This is Rita Ahrens.
Halfway. The average lifespan in the United States is 78.2 years. I am 39. Halfway. There is a part of me that feels as though I could go tomorrow having lived a full life, and there is a part of me that prays every night I will live to be my daughter's mother for a long, long time. My life now is measured against hers and with hers, against my own mothers and grandmothers in an entirely new way. I have so many friends who have already lost parents. I have not lost mine. I have so many friends who have lost children. I have not lost mine. The average number of close friends people have is 2. I have more than that. I am blessed. I work in social media. Because I know and care about so many people through the wonder of the internet and my job, I am subjected daily to their sorrows and their strengths. I realize, perhaps more than any generation before me, how completely normal everything that happens to me really is. I have bad days, I have good days, and that is normal. The universe is chaotic, and peace comes from within. I believe in God, but I also believe my God is both empathetic and hands-off. We learn from our chaos. We get another day, but the next day might suck. If we don't have the low points, we wouldn't appreciate the high ones. There is a need to balance darkness and light. I almost lost my mother to cancer when I was near my daughter's age. Every day when I look at her, I am glad for the day I have that is not filled with wakes and pain. Could I have appreciated it this much without my childhood? I doubt it.
Oh, that's terrific. That's Rita Ahrens reading from her presentation that's going to take place on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. It's the Listen to Your Mother event at Unity Temple on the Plaza. For tickets, go to listentoyourmothershow.com/Kansas City. There'll also be a link on our webpage, kcur.org. And that's what this event Saturday night is going to be, right, Lisa? It's going to be a whole series of women reading, as Rita just did to us here, right?
It is. Each person has their own original piece that they submitted, and they'll be standing up at the podium reading that piece.
Did someone have to accept it, or...
Aaron Margolin and Laura Seymour are our producers, and they put out a casting call of sorts for written pieces. And from those written pieces, they selected a number of people to come in and audition, which would be to read their piece. Mm-hmm. And then from that second screening, so to speak, they chose the 12 cast members that will be reading on Saturday night. And then Laura and Aaron will also be reading their pieces.
What was the competition like to get one of these slots? I mean, did lots of moms submit stuff?
You know what? I have to give Laura and Aaron a whole lot of credit, because I think that they realized that each of these stories was really important to the person that submitted. So I can only speak for myself, but when I came in to read, I wasn't in a great big room of people wondering what they were going to be reading. And they didn't talk about their selection process on social media, but they were really, really sweet about the fact that they appreciated hearing everyone's stories. So I can't tell you how many submissions they got. I can tell you that they've shared with us that it was a really difficult process to go through and to say, your story is in and your story isn't in, because they believed in the power of each of the stories. So being a producer is a lot different, I think, than being a cast member. But I have to give them a lot of credit for how they've handled everything.
Now, Rita, I was really struck by what you just read to us here from what you're going to do on Saturday night. This notion of the internet being what it is these days, and this idea that you threw out there that, you know, we all know now because of the internet that what we experience day to day, we're not alone anymore, that there's everyone else is sort of with you. There's someone else out there who's with you no matter sort of what you're going up against. And you can find that out by clicking on a few keystrokes, right?
Yeah, I think the internet is a double-edged sword, because on one side you have all these gorgeous pictures on Pinterest of people's houses that can't possibly really exist, and people's smiling, happy families on Facebook doing something fabulous that you can't afford to do. And that can make you feel bad. And then on the flip side of that, there are things like Listen to Your Mother, and there are things like support groups. And, you know, there's the good and the bad in life on Twitter. And when something major happens, we just get awash in all the messages. And so I in my job, have to really offset my experiences with the negative side of things with beautiful things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The biggest challenge for you when it comes to being a mom is what?
Understanding that what she is going through is also normal. Lisa and I were just talking. My daughter, yeah. Mm-hmm. Lisa and I were just talking in the green room about our daughters who are both tweens, and focusing on the fact that some of the emotional things they're going through are developmentally appropriate and not taking them personally.
such as?
You
I don't
know,
need specifics here, but just rough idea.
Hard outfit days, relate. You know, things yeah. things that are normal for 9 and 10-year-old girls.
Yeah, good days, bad days.
Yeah. I think the emotions that my daughter is experiencing are new to her, and so they can be a little overwhelming to her.
So it's hard being a 9 or a 10-year-old, much less, you said you're a 38-year-old?
I am 39.
39,
yes,
halfway.
Yes, I'm exactly 30 years older than her. And, she's an amazing girl, but she's going to go through her tween and teen years and, you know, have those outbursts. And
yes.
Just have to be patient.
As the father of two teenage boys, I think I still can relate to what you're talking about. And the big challenge for you, Lisa, when it comes to being a mom is what?
Gosh. I think not overthinking things.
Mm.
I remember back to my childhood, and I remember that the times that my mom and my dad probably wanted me to remember, I likely don't. I probably remember stuff that they thought was just everyday life. And so I try to remember that your words really matter, and you don't get to pick and choose which ones make a direct impact on your kids.
Do you think it's tougher being a mom today than it was for your mother?
I don't know that it's tougher. I think it's different. I think that now we're dealing with, I worry about my daughter. She wants a phone desperately, and I worry about her putting something on Instagram or Twitter or that kind of thing. And my parents didn't have to worry about that.
Uh-huh.
I would hate to say that it's tougher, but I would think that the challenges are just different than they were when we were growing up.
I think we're going to have to teach our kids to have better filters than our parents had to teach us, because they're going to need to be able to learn to stay away from negative messages that are coming if people are being mean to them on Facebook, or, their world can come into their bedroom in a way that ours couldn't really.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and I think that we could make mistakes and they weren't forever saved in somebody's cache or online. And now kids put so much stuff on Facebook and on social media that something that we may have done when we were younger can come back and really not necessarily.
Although I see
them
adapting to that, don't you? Like, do you remember the first time you saw somebody take a picture of themselves in the mirror and thinking, oh, my goodness, you look so dumb. And now everybody does it. And so I wonder if that's just going to normalize for them by the time our girls are teenagers.
I don't know. I hope so. I hope so. I guess we have to wait and see.
Well, I think you're so right, Lisa, about this notion of how social media is changing us and all the high tech gadgets and stuff, because, yeah, we don't have any role models to figure out how to deal with this because our folks didn't know what that stuff was.
Right. And I think it's a delicate line to walk to keeping your kids' innocence and letting them be expressive and be who they are, no matter if they're on social media or with their friends, but to still protect them from, who might be looking online that we don't know about. So I think that part is a really fine line to walk these days.
There is a sense, with our parenting these days, too. We've heard so much about this, about helicopter parenting and this notion that we're so much more engaged with our kids and monitoring them in ways that our parents never did. The old cliche about when we were kids, we'd go off for 6 hours and show back up for dinner and things were just fine. It sure ain't that way anymore now. At least it doesn't seem to be from my vantage point. What do you make of that, Rita? I mean, and how are you sort of, you're aware of that? How are you dealing with that?
Well, actually, I have a situation in which my daughter can kind of go off a little bit in our neighborhood where we are. And there's some areas that I feel completely comfortable with her going off. And so that hasn't been as big of a problem for me as just who is she with, even from a friend perspective. And not necessarily. I grew up in a really small town, and so everybody knew everybody else's parents, and it just wasn't a question of, I've been invited on a play date, and I've never met the parents. I don't even know where they live. And, so it's just very different for me to raise a daughter in a suburb of, a decently sized city versus raising a kid in a town of 5,000 in the middle of Iowa, surrounded by your relatives. It's been an adjustment for me to try to figure that out. But the biggest thing I think that we can do for our kids, whether they're running around the neighborhood or they're managing social media, is try to help them develop good coping skills and good filtering skills. And that's what we have to do as adults, too, is just really manage what's coming through and how much we're letting that affect us.
And you do that how?
Well, I actually have anxiety disorder, so I spend about 2 hours a day probably managing my filters. I think of it in the same way as a diabetic checking their blood sugar, honestly.
I mean, you say filters, you mean the physical filters on your phone?
No, I mean my head.
Your head.
Yeah.
And how do you do that?
I pay attention to when I'm starting to get anxious, and I take deep breaths, and I look at something beautiful, and I watch a cool Vimeo video of the sun rising, or I call a friend, or I eat something. I try and pay a lot of attention to my body, not get too tired or too hungry or too anything, because actually in our modern construct, we sit all day and we do let ourselves get really physically uncomfortable before we do something about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think managing stress is really important, and I'm trying to teach my daughter that.
How successful are you being?
She's way more laid back than I am.
Is she?
So I don't think she needs it as much as I do.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, she inherited my husband's type B personality. So
yeah, well, that's
good for her.
That's good. Yeah, that's terrific. Lisa, how about you? When it comes to the bigger challenges facing your motherhood and being a mom, where do you come down with that?
I'm a little bit different than Rita is. I'm the mean mom on the block. I'm the one who kids can't come over for play dates unless I've met their parents, and vice versa. And kids are always welcome in the yard, but they can't come into the house unless we've actually met and we get to know each other. And my kids know that I'm kind of watching and looking, but they still can go out and do their thing. And I think it's just, I give them little bits here and there, and I let them know that I'm a resource and I'm the strong one. And if they need someone to come and lean on, that I'm the person who wants to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it works in our reality.
Yeah. Being the mean mom, is that hard for you, or do you roll with that?
I roll with that. And I try to remember that it's a vocabulary choice and it doesn't necessarily mean what other people think it might mean. When I hear the other kids on the block say, "Your mom is the mean mom. She won't let us come into your house." I choose to hear that as, I'm protecting my kids, and I'm giving mm-hmm. them a place that is private, that is just theirs alone, and that they can choose to welcome in who they want to welcome in. So I try to remember that sometimes words are not always what we think they mean.
How many kids do you have, and how old are they?
I have three. I have a 16-year-old boy, a 12-year-old boy, and a 9-year-old girl.
Boy, so you're stacked up pretty good there.
Yeah. I am, but I'm a lucky mom. They're great kids.
How about the 16-year-old? I imagine the challenges there are very different than what your other two kids.
You know, our challenges there are very different. He's already in college, and he'll come home for summer, but
At 16, he's in college already?
He is.
Smart boy.
He's at the Kansas Academy of Math and Science at Fort Hays State University.
Wow.
So that was a big adjustment, letting him go 2 years early, but he was ready, and he was excited, and he's flourished there. So it was good to let go of the mom reins and let him go do his thing. The other two, it changed the dynamic in our house a little bit when one of them goes away, and I'm learning to cope with that. And I think, honestly, they've probably handled it a little bit better than I did.
Well, my 18-year-old is about to go off for college in a few months, so if you got some tips, I'm all ears, because there are some days I'm thinking, this is going to be the greatest thing in the world, and there are other days I'm thinking, I'm not sure I'll be able to get through it. So
I think that's a roller coaster that's just going to happen whenever your kids are not at home. I try to remember what my dad told me. He drove me all the way to Chicago to go to school, and this was before
we had— Where'd you go to school?
Well, I'm sorry?
What school did you go to?
I went to Loyola University.
Well, he picked DePaul, so—
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. It came down to those two.
Did it?
Yeah.
DePaul's a great school, too.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, we had one phone in the common area that my dad would call, and nobody knew which girl was going to pick up the phone, and he couldn't text me. He couldn't see a picture on Facebook, and— He told me something when he dropped me off. He said, "Lisa, I've done what I was supposed to do. I've given you the roots that I want you to have, and it's up to you to go out and make your own choices now." And I try to remember that with my oldest, with Adam, because I do trust him to make choices. And I know that sometimes he'll fall and sometimes he'll falter, but I believe that he'll get back up. And I want to be that resource for him when he needs to get back up.
I think that's a really good point in relation to what you were saying earlier about helicopter parenting too, Steve, because that's exactly what I try to keep in mind when I'm tempted to rescue my daughter. This morning she forgot her library book, and I saw her realize it on the bus as it was pulling it away. And I thought about taking it in on the way in here, and then I made myself not, because I don't want to bail her out. She needs to learn to stand on her own 2 feet.
And that's so hard as a mom.
I was really kind of breaking my heart a little bit.
Yeah.
You could see the look on her face, though, this morning.
I saw the moment she realized the panic, and then she was like banging on the window of the bus.
Let me out of here. Yeah. Stop the bus.
I couldn't figure out what it was, and I went upstairs, and her library book was on her bed, and I figured it out.
Yeah, so you knew.
I knew, and I decided not to take it.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, tell us a little bit about what your presentation is going to be, and give us you brought an excerpt from your work here, too.
I did. Mine is, like I said earlier, it's about my experiences as a daughter, and it's not necessarily the feel-good piece of the show. So when people listen, I want people to remember that there are really funny parts in the show, that they're not all tearjerkers. But my piece is called The 180 Factor, and this is an excerpt. It wasn't until my oldest son, Adam, was a toddler that I understood that behind the word mother is a person, a woman, a girl, really, someone who carries beliefs and experiences that have nothing to do with her children, but everything to do with the complicated person she is just because she's her. And it wasn't until Nicholas joined Adam in the exclusive club that calls me Mommy that I understood that the voice in my head, the voice I knew as Mom, didn't have to become my voice as a mom. My personal reality is that the voice in my head came from an overgrown child who used a teenage pregnancy to escape an abusive home, a woman who was raised by alcoholic parents, a woman who found lying easier than loving, unless we factor in the drugs and the cheating that made love and lying one and the same in her take on reality. It wasn't until I became a mother that I understood that, biology aside, a woman can't just be a mom. She decides, sometimes moment by moment, which voice she'll use as a mother. Will it be the default voice or her own? Because if we're being honest, the default voice in my head still uses words like fat, ugly, and mistake to describe the woman that I see when I look in the mirror. And as much as I despise that voice in my head, I have come to appreciate it for being the beacon that guides me now that I am a mother. I call it my 180 factor. What my mom didn't teach me was how to be the mother that my kids deserve. Her gift to me, and the gift that I am thankful for, is teaching me how it feels to have a bad mother. For better or worse, her voice is still strong, but so now is the knowledge that I have to overcome it, because now people are telling my kids to listen to their mother.
So you had to overcome a lot.
I did. I didn't have an ideal childhood. I had a dad who picked up so much of that slack, but your mom's voice is your mom's voice. So it took me a long time, and I used to joke that if I made parenting decisions, I would just think of what she might do and then try to do the opposite. Mm-hmm. And that actually morphed into my parenting philosophy.
Hey, how did these Listen to Your Mother events get started? I mean, it was Madison, Wisconsin, I think I read.
It was founded by Ann Immig. She writes a blog called Ann's Rants, and she has a strong theater background. And she put together the show based on the community keynote at the Blogger Conference. She liked seeing the group of women reading together and the emotional impact that it had on the audience. And so she, being Anne, decided to try it on her own. And so the first show was in Madison, Wisconsin in 2010. And then it went to 5 cities, then 10 cities last year. And this year it's 24 cities.
Again, these are all cities where the women who live there are presenting these shows like you guys.
Yes, produce, direct, and put on the shows, and each of the shows raises money for the charity of their choice that's local to that show.
And what's the charity of your choice for the Kansas City show?
It's Rosebrook Center.
Great choice.
So
tell us about Rosebrook Center.
Rosebrook Center is a charity that I was familiar with only by name before we went and toured a week or so ago. It's a place where women and children who have been in an abusive situation can go to be safe and to heal and to get their lives back in order. There's a facility where these women and the children live. There's also a hotline that offers advice if they can't be removed from the home. But I was really struck with the tenderness and the happiness that's there, despite the circumstances that all of these women are dealing with. And I think it's important to say that 10% of every ticket that's sold for Listen to Your Mother goes to the Rosebrook Center. And there will be a representative there Saturday night who will take in-kind donations, and they will also take cash and checks if anybody wants to donate directly there.
Rita, what do you hope people walk away with from this event on Saturday evening, the Listen to Your Mother event? What's the takeaway going to be?
Well, I can say from being at our rehearsals, I didn't know very many of the women who are my castmates before I went into it. And I came out of, a 90-minute rehearsal forever changed for having met them. I've been through a lot of spoken word, performances before. And I find them incredibly touching and life-changing.
And they're touching why?
I think because the women are saying what so many of us feel and are not able to verbalize. And, You know, I've never had an experience like Lisa's, but having heard her read her piece, I feel like I know her so well.
And it's one person standing up in front of the audience sort of bearing all, and there's a certain power in that, I imagine, right?
I think there's a power for the speaker and also power for the listener.
Yeah. Well, Rita Ahrens, Lisa Allen, thank you so much for coming in and talking about Listen to Your Mother. That event, again, takes place 7 o'clock this Saturday evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. More information about the performance and all of our broadcasts, you can find it at kcur.org. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for talking with us.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Well, tomorrow's show, desegregation of the military was a major issue for Harry Truman's administration. We'll talk about the motivations behind the change in the story of the Double V. Plus, we'll have the latest installment of 90 Mile View. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.